Hotel Lima Echo November radio check.
Papa Echo November, good afternoon, Ritu 5.
Good afternoon, Ritu 5 as well, Papa Echo November.
Live from San Jose, California, it's the Fear the Fin Hockey Podcast. Featuring your hosts, Jason Plank and Matt Taylor, we'll be breaking down all the Sharks actions from the past week. From block shots to trade talk and everything in between, we're hitting harder than a Brian March McKee. FTF Radio starts now.
Welcome to the first Fear the Fin Hockey Podcast. You're Jason Blake.
And you're Matt Taylor.
And we don't have pants on.
We're assuming you don't either, dear reader, because it is Casual Fridays here at the Fear the Fin, and we like to keep it casual. As you can tell, this is our first podcast. It's kind of a new frontier for both of us. We've been on Twitter and fearthefin.com for, you know, the last 2 years, 2.5 years. We've never really established, a regular podcast outside of the one failure of a talk show episode.
Disastrous fire burn. Terrible. Let's not do that this time.
Terrible.
Go.
So in this podcast, we're going to be doing a lot of new things, things that we haven't really done on the front page of Fear the Fin. Thus far, for example, if we do an interview with a player at practice, instead of transcribing the entire interview, which takes a while, believe it or not, we're probably just going to take the MP3 clip and plug it into the podcast. And, you know, it's just an easier way, to get that information to you guys, as well as kind of a nice kind of change of pace instead of just reading a bunch of written words on the website.
Yeah, and, you know, something that makes it a little more organic. So we're happy about that. And even though we'll have mistakes, it'll be fun.
It will be fun. It's a new experience.
Let's start with the current state of the San Jose Sharks. January was not the best month for San Jose. Started out on a good note, beating LA 1-0, which was nice because on Fear the Fin night, LA pretty much embarrassed the Sharks in their own building. It was very disheartening.
I think at one point in the first period, shots were 15-1.
Yeah, it was bad. So starting out with a win against LA was good. But then the Sharks went on to lose 6 straight, and that really got everyone down in the dumps, especially. I mean, I think we got pretty depressed for a point there, and all the readers, too. You can tell in the comments that it wasn't the best time for Sharks fans. But then you had that 4-game winning streak, and now we're headed into the All-Star break right on the heels of a loss to Los Angeles. I think the Sharks, they're 2-2 this year. The Sharks have won 2 games in L.A. and lost, or wait, no. They won a game at home. They won a game in L.A., so it's pretty much split season series so far.
As Matt was mentioning, the 6-game losing streak really, to me, sort of defines the Sharks season in the sense that towards the end of that losing streak against teams like, I remember the Anaheim game, Hiller played phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Against Nashville, Rene played very, very well. So even though they were, you know, showing signs of improvement and getting out of that, they still ended up losing those games in regulation. And to go 6 games without a point in the Western Conference this year is...
It's killer.
It's extremely killer. And that streak is going to define their season in the sense that in order to get back into the playoffs and establish some breathing room, they're going to have to play phenomenal hockey from here on out. And as we've seen from the beginning of this season, consistency has been a huge issue with the team, all the way down from the top line to the blue line and in net, even though Niemi has begun to take the reins a little bit in that sense. So that 6-game losing streak, I think we're going to point to at the end of the year and say, you know, that's really why the Sharks are in the spot that they are now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, but you could also look at it as it's, you know, a turning point this season. Mm-hmm. They lose 6 games in a row, and then, you know, they turned it around. They won 4 in a row, and even though they lost last night, they didn't look necessarily great, which they didn't. They looked pretty bad, especially in the third period.
Third period in overtime.
God, that was just a backbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hate to question anybody's, you know, drive or, but when one of your leaders gets a stick in the face and he's bleeding like crazy from the mouth, and then you go out and you throw out that kind of power play effort, I just thought that was the definition of really what's been wrong with the Sharks, is what that when there's been urgency, they haven't really risen to that urgency. But like we said, you know, four games in a row with wins,
very positive
getting points,
note.
So
very
that's
positive.
That's
note.
Positive. So this really could be the turning point. Even with last night's loss, it wasn't overtime, so the Sharks got 9 points out of the possible 10 over the last 5 games, which is encouraging.
Mm-hmm. I guess really the concern that I have is, even if they do, I wrote an article earlier today, pessimistic plank versus peppy plank, and peppy plank is just the weirdest sort of adjective to use for oneself. But in that, I was kind of talking about that 6-game losing streak. Really what it means is, even if they do manage to make the playoffs, and I think that they are going to make the playoffs, I don't think there's any question that they do make the playoffs, but that 6-game losing streak really could define whether or not they're playing a team like Dallas, a team like Nashville, a team like Phoenix in the first round, versus going up one against one of the Western Conference Titans in Detroit and Vancouver. I mean, those are just completely different matchups that, I mean, just pose so many problems for the Sharks. Because any other team in the West, I think really, if the Sharks on paper, you know, ignoring all of the inconsistency that's plagued them this year, on paper in the playoffs, I think they show up and they bring their A game.
I think so too.
But even if they are able to bring their A game against Detroit and Vancouver, if Detroit and Vancouver bring their A game as well, it's a coin toss at best, and I would have to give the nod to both Detroit and Vancouver, who have deeper teams, both on the blue line. Forwards, I think the Sharks match up fairly well.
Anyone in the league, though. I mean, it's not the Sharks' crop of forwards. You know, they went through that slump in the 6-game streak when they weren't scoring at all. But the Sharks' forwards on paper are as good as anybody. And, like, if you remember, you go back to the beginning of the season, before you knew how Wallin was going to play lately, before you knew how Huskins was going to play, you looked at this team on paper and said, this is a top-5 team NHL-wide.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, even with the problems and the loss of Nabokov and the loss of Blake, you still looked at this team and said, you know, this is a cup contender. But there is that obvious hole on defense, like you're saying. That's the real issue that this team has, and we'll talk about that as we go on. I think we're going to touch on that a lot later.
So right now, I think probably good to just transition into the Ben Eager and Kyle Wellwood acquisitions. In terms of importance, both Matt and I like the deals as a whole, in large part because there wasn't a whole lot of cap space given up. I'm not a big fan of Ben Eager. I think, you know, I mean, he gives you what the press release says he gives you. He gives you the grit, you know, the energy on that fourth line. But the fact of the matter is, in San Jose, he's a fourth line player. Yeah. He's going to be plugging in 7 minutes a game. In terms of his performances with the team since the time he became a Shark, I haven't been disappointed relative to expectations. I haven't been pleasantly surprised. I think he plugs minutes, and he's a little more experienced than a guy like Brandon Mashinter, like a guy than John McCarthy, and I think that's what Doug Wilson was looking to get.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what he was going for, because even with Kyle Wellwood, both of them have a lot of playoff experience. You have Eager 2 years in a row with the Blackhawks, a cup run last year with the Blackhawks, and you have Wellwood, who played 2 seasons in Vancouver when they were high seeds both times. They played the Blackhawks, lost to them. So I think that's the biggest thing about it, is it's where you would notice a Desjardins or a Mashinter make a mistake and not look like they were ready for that spotlight. Mm-hmm. You're not going to notice Eager and Wellwood, and not noticing those guys is a good thing. Although
I have noticed Wellwood. He's been creating a lot with the puck. He has some very good puck creativity.
Well, he was on a line with Thornton last night too. I mean, I think they have a lot of confidence in him. It's going to take a while, I think, for Wellwood to get back to NHL speed, and you could see him try to make some moves that maybe would work against KHL defenders that aren't going to work here. So who knows if he's going to contribute the points going forward, but I like that move, and I know you do too.
Yeah, so in essence, I think to sum up the Kyle Wellwood and Ben Eager acquisitions, they're good acquisitions. They're good depth acquisitions. I think it makes players, Matt and I have talked about this before in our article that we published right after the trade, but they make, you know, dangling a guy like Brandon Mashinter, dangling a guy even like Ben Ferriero, if you're looking to do, you know, a bigger move for a bigger defenseman, because if you're going for a top three defenseman, a guy like Ben Ferriero has to be on the table, even though I think he's had a pretty good season.
Yeah, he's had a good year. He's been slower lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, he started off with a bang with Klo and Couture, but as you can see, or as you've seen, that Couture and Klo, to a lesser extent, make really anybody on that line a threat. Mm-hmm. They've worked so well
together. Kind of like the Joe Thornton of the last 2 years, where you put anybody on Joe Thornton's line and he'll get guys out of slumps.
Ryan Bessie, remember last year?
Bessie,
yeah, in New York, he scored
three goals in like five games
Something. So, I mean, you piggyback a lesser player on the Couture line, and he's gonna get some points. But I think that Wellwood brings more of that than a Ferriero does,
mm-hmm.
and it makes Ferriero expendable. It also makes, I don't want to get into Devin Setoguchi yet, but actually, I mean, we can if we want to talk about the cap
Let's just talk about the need for a defenseman right now.
Yeah.
So CapGeek.com, which is an excellent resource for any sort of thing that you're looking for in terms of team financials, the NHL salary cap, just the financial end of the financial side of the ledger, the financial side of the game of hockey. It's an excellent resource. And they have the Sharks able to acquire, without giving up any roster player, roughly $1.3 million right now. So that means that the Sharks can make a trade, you know, offering up a fifth-round draft pick, not demote anybody, and not trade anyone away, and bring in a player that's worth $1.3 million, which, in the grand scheme of things, is some nice breathing room. But if you're going to be looking to pick up a player that's going to come fit in the top three role in San Jose, I mean, there's just absolutely – it's not even a question worth posing. I mean, you're just not going to be able to get a guy at that sort of cap space.
Well, for example, you look at the guys that the Sharks have right now that aren't Dan Boyle. So you have Vlasic at 3.1. Murray at 2.5, Wallin at 2.5, Huskins at 1.7.
Mm.
So those guys are all more expensive than 1.3, and we want to replace two of them right now.
Right.
So I think that any trade that's going to happen with San Jose is going to have to include a roster player.
There's no doubt.
Maybe they do it as two separate deals and move. I don't know who would want him right now, but I think that Kent Huskins has lost a lot of Doug Wilson. And
after
his coach.
He came back from injury, before that, he was a serviceable third pairing defenseman. Gets you 12 minutes a night, he'll plug it in, and really, I didn't have many issues with Huskins outside of his cap hit. You take his contract out of the equation, and he's a decent third line guy.
Yeah.
After coming back from injury, though, I think Huskins has really struggled, and whether that's a mental thing or just, you know, a natural fluctuation in what he's been giving us over the last year and a half, or maybe over the last year and a half he's kind of been playing above the level that, you know, above his true talent level, who knows. But Huskins definitely is a guy who's become a liability on the ice for some of the shifts that he's out there, and he was actually scratched two games ago in favor of Derek Jocelyn. But in essence, you were talking about possibly moving Huskins and then
just
doing solely
else.
For a cap dump move. I mean, Huskins obviously will not be the centerpeace in any deal.
You have Doug Wilson picking up the phone. Right. Here's Kent Huskins in a fifth. Give me. but you move Kent Huskins and
Huskins.
Course, we're
Kent Huskins in a fifth wouldn't even get you a Fear the Thin T-shirt.
Hey, those are hard to come by.
Shameless plug.
Huskins. You move him to a team maybe like the Islanders or a team who's not going to make the playoffs. You're killing me right now. A team that's not going to make the playoffs that has cap space, right? Because then you're giving them an expiring contract, which, you know, although it's not worth a ton, they're going to pay him for 2 months and then be done with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is something that, you know, for a seventh round pick or for a sixth round pick or whatever it is, you know, that's not going to be an issue, I don't think, to get rid of Huskins. At the other standpoint, most of the guys are still going to be making more than $3 million, the guys that you want to bring aboard, because you don't need a depth defenseman like you did last year when you had Rob Blake. You need a guy who's going to come in, play big minutes, spell Dan Boyle, be able to play the power play. And there's not a lot of those guys out there, especially for cheap. It's not a common commodity.
And those players that those teams have, I mean, why would they want to give up a guy like that unless the package coming in is phenomenal?
Yeah. So with that, we're going to head into a break, and we'll join up with you guys right afterward.
Doing up here, man?
I can't take it anymore, man. I just can't.
It's okay. Step away from the ledge. I'm gonna talk you through this. She may have left you, but there are plenty of fish in the sea.
I don't care about that, man. It's not her. It's never been about her.
Then why are you up here on the ledge, covered in what seems like goat's blood?
Well, I've been on HF board so much lately, and it got me thinking.
Thinking about what?
It's Huskins, man. It's Kent fucking Huskins.
What about Kent Huskins? He's a third-pairing D-man on a playoff team. He plays like 12 minutes a night.
It's everything, man. The terrible play, the contract. That goddamn contract. I thought it was 1.7 over 2 years. What was Wilson thinking? Huskins haunts my dreams, John. I can't get him out of my head. His goofy face is burnt onto my brain.
Calm down. Just drink this.
What is it?
Got it from the Sharks organization. Just try some.
Hey, this is pretty good. I feel confident in the team. I feel reborn.
I know. Just let it rush over your soul like a teal wave.
Is that Jamie McGinn shooting a puck into the sunset?
It is, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Get your San Jose Sharks Kool-Aid wherever Sharks merchandise is sold. Sharks Kool-Aid, feel the teal.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
To the Bay White.
Oh yeah!
Kind of sounded like Macho Man Randy Savage.
Step into a Slim Jim. Oh yeah!
Yeah. So, we promised it and we are delivering a breakdown of six defensemen that we've kind of heard being thrown around in rumor circles right now. TCY, or Matt, I guess I should call you. Do you want to do the honors?
Yeah, I'll
provide the names. This red carpet is out for you.
I started out with probably the worst one, and this comes from someone where you know his track record before. We don't even have to mention his name, but
oh, man.
Tobias Enstrom. That's the name that's been linked to the Sharks lately. We've gotten some questions about that, and even though he's a great player and the Sharks would love to have him, love to have him at that contract at that age, be perfect.
Phenomenal player.
We talked to Ben Wright, who's a beat writer for the Thrashers, and he said it would be the biggest surprise in the history of the franchise if they were to trade Enstrom away. So I'd say that that's...
Biggest surprise, boom, except no. For making the playoffs.
Yeah. that's pretty good. That was a good one. But yeah, Enstrom's not going anywhere. So I think you could really lay that one to bed, especially now because he's hurt. He was going to go to the All-Star game, broke a finger. I mean, there's no way that he's going to get traded. With Atlanta still trying to make the playoffs too, why would you trade away your best defenseman besides Byfuglien?
So yeah, I mean, but in terms of, you know, a player who fits the Sharks, as Matt was saying, Enstrom obviously is a player like that. And that's really a player that we think Doug Wilson is looking for, but as we mentioned earlier, very difficult to obtain. So the second guy that has kind of been making the rounds is the one who's always making the rounds, Thomas Caberle. He of Waffle Throwing Nation up in Toronto.
The funny thing about Caberle is that last year on the Talk Shoe podcast, I was all about Caberle. Mm-hmm. I wanted him so bad. I was ready to trade Klo for Caberle.
Right.
Now, I'm really kind of soured on him, and you have...
It's kind of... It's funny, because Matt, as he was saying, has really soured on him, and I've kind of become to, you know, think that he might be a little more beneficial to the team than I initially thought otherwise. But in terms of contract hit, I believe he's... Pull up Cap Keek right now if you can. I think he's around four. God, we've written so much about him. over the last year.
It's either four or five.
He's going to be a UFA at the end of the year, but he does have that no-trade clause. And if you remember back in, was that 2008?
Mm-hmm.
When allegedly Doug Wilson had completed a deal for him, but Caberle actually did not waive his no-trade clause. The issue with Caberle going forward, obviously offensively he would be a treat. Would it be able to run the power play just as well as Dan Boyle? Probably better than Dan Boyle has this year, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and just to jump in, 4.25.
4.25, Caberle. So that means in terms of what you're giving up, you're going to have to be giving up more than Setoguchi in terms of roster players. You might be able to finagle and put Huskins in on the deal just because, you know, Huskins played with Burke in Anaheim. So maybe that's something you can do, and Burke's willing to take that salary on in the event that he does get Setoguchi. But you have to get package probably Setoguchi and probably, well, I see, the thing is, I don't know though, if you have to put that much in for Caberle, just because he's kind of a commodity where the Leafs are either going to re-sign him next year, which I don't think they will.
They won't.
I think they'll probably
step
away from him.
But they've held on to him for so long through so many trades.
This is,
you know.
Right, but this is the year when his contract's up, and like it's kind of a free agent year.
Yeah, but I think Burke's under a lot of pressure right now, being how many years he's been with the team, how many times he hasn't traded Caberle.
Three.
Yeah. If he trades him now and he doesn't get a huge return for him, people are going to second guess.
I think Setoguchi would go over well with the Toronto
Fenders.
Yeah,
and now, like we said, now he's got 10
goals. And
I think
it would be
not a terrible thing.
A good move. I would much rather, if I'm Brian Burke, I would much rather acquire Setoguchi than hold on to Caberle and
lose
go
it.
For the playoffs.
Yeah.
In parentheses, since this
air
isn't
quotes,
a video podcast, you can't see the parentheses there. Long story short, will Caberle come to San Jose? Matt, your thoughts?
No. I don't think he will. I think he would be a fit. He'd work. It wouldn't be the best option for the Sharks, but it would be something that would be an improvement. I'd welcome it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. You hit up our next name.
Next guy.
Whoever it is.
Also a Leaf, Francois Beauchemin. What do you think?
I think Beauchemin's a little overrated, to be completely honest with you. He's not a bad defenseman, and I think he fits. He would fit in the top three for San Jose. He definitely would upgrade that blue line. I don't necessarily like the fact that he comes in with like a 3.8 million, 3.8 over two more years.
One year after this year.
That's a little more stomachable for me. I think Beauchemin, he does bring a lot to the team. Is he the perfect fit for me? No. I think in Anaheim, his stock was kind of improved just playing with and behind Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger. He struggled in Toronto. Then again, who hasn't struggled in Toronto?
Yeah.
He struggled in Toronto, but yes, I think he's a little overrated. I don't really like the cap hit. But when push comes to shove, and if the Sharks are looking to make an upgrade, if he's one of the only ones available, he is not a bad fit by any means. He fits right into that top three. He'll play the PK for you. He probably won't see all too much penalty kill. They'd probably just keep Pavs on the point.
Yeah. Power play.
On the point on the power play. But yeah, not a perfect fit. But then again, honestly, finding that perfect fit is so hard that Beauchemin probably is one of the best, if not the best, available options out there in terms of reasonable trade targets for Wilson to pursue.
And he's a good option because he's just an all-around guy. He's not an offensive star with no defensive stuff like Caberle is. He's not all defense and no offense like Chris Phillips, which we're going to get to in a second.
Mm-hmm.
He's just an all-around guy who's going to fit in most situations for the team. He's going to be able to play in the top three, which makes him a good option. Now, would I give up Setoguchi for him, which is the only chip that the Sharks really have going forward?
With 3.8? You probably have to move.
You have to. I mean, Mitchell.
You have to move. No, Mitchell wouldn't get. I'm saying in terms of salary, you would probably have to move Setoguchi and a guy. And then you'd have to move a guy like Setoguchi and then a salary dump.
Well, Torrey Mitchell's 1.7. So
there
if
you
move him, Huskins, and Seto, it doesn't have to be in the same deal. But if you move those guys together, that's enough money to get in that range. So Beauchemin, a Shark, yes or no?
I think Doug Wilson goes after him, and I... That's the most non-committal thing I've ever heard, by the way. Beauchemin a shark? No. I don't think Doug Wilson will be able to get that deal done. I actually don't think that he believes Devin Setoguchi would be worth, or Francois Beauchemin would be worth the price to pay that he would have to pay in order to get Beauchemin under the Sharks.
I also say no. I think that Doug Wilson has always been an under-the-radar type GM who he goes after the guy that nobody expected him to go after. Nobody thought he was going to pick up Ben Eager. Nobody thought he was going to get Kyle Wellwood. I mean,
Ben Eager, Kyle Wellwood.
Oh, my God. No, but I mean, he finds opportunities that usually aren't front of the line out there because that's what's usually going to cost you the most, I think. So I say no also just because it's been publicized so much that that's going to happen. Right. So I say no, that it doesn't happen. Next guy, we mentioned him, Chris Phillips.
Chris Phillips is, he's an intriguing guy. He's very defensively orientated. He'll get you some offense. He's really struggled this season, however. Yeah. But in terms of a top three guy who's going to be able to come in and shut down those third period leads that have really hurt the Sharks this season, I think Chris Phillips is a good fit. He's a UFA. Do I give up Devin Setoguchi for him? That's a hard sell for me, and I would say no.
Yeah.
And with Setoguchi, the only available option, would Chris Phillips become a Shark? No.
No, I don't think so either. I think that he doesn't bring the offense that you need. If Dan Boyle's playing 28 minutes a game because they need his offense on the blue line, and that, you know, Phillips does not bring that for you. Kind of a wild card thing I'm going to throw in right now. Another guy who's been mentioned, we haven't talked about it, the two of us.
I guess we also have to add that there's no way Brian Murray ever deals with Doug Wilson again after the Jonathan Chichu fiasco.
Another name that's been mentioned was mentioned in the offseason. We thought we were going to get him, Sergei Gonchar.
Sergei Gonchar. I haven't even heard that. You have to go with that one.
Big cap.
You're throwing me way off with that one. That is from left field.
5.5 mil.
There's no way.
No, you can't bring
him
in.
No is the answer.
So that's a tough one also. And
with Gonchar's history of injury troubles, he's a primarily, I mean, he's offense first all the way. I think he would get torn alive in the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, no on Gonchar.
So,
especially with that cap hit.
Those are the guys who are out there maybe getting traded. I mean, Gonchar, because he's in Ottawa, I think there's some more stuff
about
that.
He's in the first year of a
three-year deal, 5.5 every year, which is kind of a crazy deal for him, 35-plus.
Right.
Nuts.
Yeah, 35-plus, so even if he retires, yeah.
So
There's no way Doug Wilson goes after that with the amount of cap space he's already allocated to Joe Thornton, Dan Boyle, Joe Pavelski, Patrick Marleau, Danny Heatley. That just doesn't fit in financially.
Yeah. Extended contracts, not a good thing for this team at this juncture, especially with Logan Couture coming up 2 years down the road. You got to be thinking about that.
Definitely.
Okay, two guys that both of us agree on that we
and Jamie McGinn, because Jamie McGinn is getting a huge contract.
Oh,
honestly, Jamie McGinn. I guess we're gonna talk about this for 30 seconds. I know TCY probably or Matt probably doesn't want to talk about it, but I'm gonna talk
about it.
Jamie McGinn got demoted today with Ben Ferriero.
Right.
On Twitter, I kind of explained the situation to some people, although I think most people who are listening to this totally understand that it's a cap-related move. My feelings are that I actually don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility where McGinn may stay down in Worcester for a little longer.
You think so?
I don't think it's possible, but in terms of Ferriero, I feel like I just know Ferriero's coming back up.
Right.
Where with McGinn, with the lack of scoring that he's exhibited this year.
I disagree. I think that in the post-game stuff with McClellan, even when McGinn's not scoring, he's always being pointed out as a guy who brings fire. You can really put him on any line at this point, and he's going to go down and forecheck. He's going to open up space. He's going to get opportunities.
I mean, I don't think there's any way I put him on the first and second.
Line. I mean, piggyback.
And I have his jersey.
Yeah, I know. I got the best end of that one. When we said Couture McGinn jersey, I got the Couture one.
I love my McGinn.
I know.
I love my McGinn. Honestly, wherever McGinn goes, this is a pledge to you, my friend. Jamie, if you're listening. I will get you jersey for every single team you play with, provided it's not an NHL team. It has to be an NHL team, and you have to play more than 10 games. So that's a lot of qualifiers. So I may just end up owning the Sharks jersey because I have a feeling that honestly, you may only score one goal for the rest of the regular season, but when the Sharks make the playoffs, you're scoring at least one per series. That's the mark that down, folks. Mark that down.
So, speaking about unfounded optimism, we have two guys left that we want to talk about.
Yes.
guy that somebody on Twitter brought up.
Twitter.
Well, no, it was a suggestion, and now it's talked about, and I really agree with this. Joni Pitkinen. Carolina is doing really well now. They've won a lot of games in a row. They put together a winning streak, so they're probably going to make the playoffs. But before, when they weren't going to, they looked like sellers. And Pitkinen, as a UFA, was a guy that was out there, and I really like that.
Pitkinen brings a great blend of offense. He can score goals. He's like Cabernet in that he's able to run the power play. The thing is with Pitkinen, he's also able to see tough top minutes. Perfect number two guy where you have Dan Boyle and Joni Pitkinen on dual pairings, and then you put Vlasic and Murray with them. That's a very good top four with Vlasic, an excellent top three with Vlasic, Pitkinen, and Boyle, and a pretty good top four with Murray included in there.
Yeah, I think
as you were saying though. You know, Carolina is looking to be buyers now. I think, you know, with the acquisition of Ian White, who is another guy that we had targeted as would be an excellent addition to the Sharks. Obviously, he's not going to be traded now. But with the acquisition of Ian White 3 months ago, as well as the fact that they're fighting for a playoff spot, as you said, it's probably unlikely that Pitkinen will be traded. And which leads us to another unlikely possibility, Brent Burns. An amazing player. I think does he lead Minnesota in goals this season?
Yes, he does.
With like 14, or he's second?
It's close.
Check it out right now.
Clutterbuck is close also. Let me see real quick here.
But anyway, Brent Burns, I mean, just young, an amazing skill set. He can skate. He can play the power play. He can play the penalty kill. His quality of competition numbers aren't up at the top of the team, but with San Jose, he would be a top three defenseman. And the great thing about Brent Burns, if he was acquired, which he won't be, but if he was if he was acquired, that's a player that you can build around for years to come, which is something I think that's kind of, we'll talk about this later, maybe next week, because we're running up against the 30-minute mark right now. But that's one thing that I think with the Sharks kind of in the eight. Sorry, you finish up Brent Burns.
That's fine.
Okay.
Just to throw in there, Havlat, Koivu, Burns, and Clutterbuck are all tied with 14.
There you go.
So here's the thing about Brent Burns, and I'm a little bit obsessed with the player, I guess, as a possibility for the Sharks.
Think of me and Willie Mitchell last year, except that was a public a public obsession, a public meltdown. This Brent Burns obsession that Matt has is behind closed doors, calling me at all hours of the night. Sal, you hear anything on Brent Burns? Burnsy, I love my Burnsy.
So I don't think I've ever said I love my Burnsy except for right now. But I'll start saying that more going forward. So my Burnsy, I've I tried to roll with that, but it didn't work. I've talked to some people in Minnesota, and we've tried to get some information on this because it has
when
been.
When Matt says he talked to some people in Minnesota, he actually talked to my uncle.
Yes, exactly.
No, seriously though, Matt has contacted a certain somebody in Minnesota.
Right. Don't want to mention his name because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but
he's a legitimate source.
Yes.
It's sounds
really terrible that we're saying, oh yeah, we have sources.
Yeah, we have sources. Right. He's a person. It's whatever. This is really just
anyways,
go right
legitimate
ahead.
Source.
Yes.
But a couple points about Minnesota that are valid. Next year they're going to have the fourth highest salary in the league. They're a team that hasn't made it past the first round in years. They're a team that might not
to the Western Conference Finals. How many years ago?
Oh God, that was a long time ago, man. It's been like 4 years that they haven't made it past the first round.
That's when they played the Ducks. Yeah, that's probably 2003, I think, when they made the Western.
So
Conference
So that's
finals.
Their real
the
last success in a
right.
market that is starved
right.
for hockey. They love hockey.
Definitely.
So. Yeah, Brent Burns is a cornerstone, but he's also getting paid a good, decent amount of money.
Three and a half.
For another year after this. After that, he's going to get paid a ton of money because he's a great defenseman. He's a guy who's going to probably earn in the 5-6 range going forward. So, you know, looking at that, he's a salary that they're not going to be able to probably afford in the future if they want to bring in offense also, which is something that they lack considerable amounts of. They also lack a lot of young guys. They don't have very many prospects on the offensive side. So there is a possibility out there, if Minnesota falls out of competition, that Brent Burns is going to be a name tossed around because he has been in the past to bring in a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Setoguchi probably isn't that big guy that Minnesota wants.
No.
But he is an offensive guy, and he's someone that you could build a package around to get Burns in there if that's the guy that you want to go after. If I'm Doug Wilson, that's a call that I make because I want to, especially as the trade deadline gets closer, I talk to Minnesota and I say, Setoguchi, and you know, you're going to have to throw in high picks. You're going to probably have to throw in Coil, but that's a risk that I would take because the Sharks are so starved for defense.
We were kind of talking about packages over the last, 3 months probably?
Yeah.
With Burns, I mean, it would probably have to involve Setoguchi, Coil, Ferio, a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
And it's something, I mean, maybe you take, maybe that first becomes a second, or maybe you have to throw in a third on top of that. But somewhere in that range, a very, very big.
It would be a huge package.
It would be a very big package.
Which, immature.
I know, with Burns, yeah.
Yeah, with this.
The whole Burns love affair, it's just, yeah.
This year, I would do it.
Yes.
And he's a guy that would come in, and I think that's what Doug Wilson needs. He needs somebody who's going to be here for more than 1 year. He's not going after a rental player.
Right.
So, wishful thinking. We can
yes.
keep that up there in the ether. but, for I mean, that I don't think it's going to happen. I say no also on Burns, which sucks because we've said no on every single person that we wanted to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be a move.
I think in terms of most likely, Buchemin.
Buchemin is
the most likely.
Buchemin, Caberlet, Phillips. I mean, if we're going to lay those
right.
guys out that we talked about, Buchemin, Caberlet, Phillips, and then I'd even say Pitkinen probably before Burns and then Enstrom last. There's no
right.
way. I mean,
yeah.
that would be absolutely no way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if they get anybody in there who could play, you know, defensive, offensive role and also eat a ton of minutes, that'd be great. But there's not a lot of guys out there that do that.
It's a tough sell. So here's at the end of every podcast, we're going to have a question. And then you guys are going to write us answers either in the comments or over email. And then we'll read them over the air next week and kind of discuss them. So the question this week is, with the Sharks kind of in that lower end of the playoff picture with the 8 seed, the 9 seed, you know, we don't really know how things are going to shake out. Do you think it is wise to go after a rental player who's going to be a UFA next year when you have to give up a player like Devin Setoguchi, who's a young guy in RFA? Do you think that is a wise decision for the general manager to make? Or would you rather hold on to Setoguchi and roll with the team that you have in this year and kind of say, hey, this roster hasn't really proved that they can find consistency over an extended period of time. So let's see if they can figure it out on their own. But giving up a part of your future for a guy who's going to be with you just for the next 3 months isn't really worth it. So, yeah, the question is, you know, is that? Do you think that it's worth it to give up Devin Setoguchi or another young player such as Setoguchi for a rental player that would be with the team until the end of this 2010-2011 season?
Throw in some names, too. I mean, we like to hear the guys that you're thinking of, and we'll discuss them too. And then the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to ask you a question, and then one of us is going to ask the other a question. We'll kind of take a tally as we go through the year to see who got
right.
the most
yes.
right.
Yes.
So this week I'm going to be asking Plank a question. We're going to do a before or after, kind of like an over-under, and you'll understand what we're talking about. All-Star Game this weekend, they're doing a fantasy draft type situation, which I think is awesome. I really like the format of it.
I think
it
it's good.
Year.
I'll probably watch the fantasy draft and
then
watch the game.
It, yeah. but Dan Boyle, only Shark going to the All-Star Game. I'm going to set the before or after, and you choose. I'm going to put him at 16th.
In terms of being picked 16th.
In terms of being picked 16th.
So that's
player.
Round. That's the 8th round? Right, that's the 8th round. I am saying after. Dan Boyle's going to go after the 16th pick. I think there's a lot of other names out there that I would pick before Dan Boyle.
I would, yeah.
Yeah, so I think after. I think Dan Boyle maybe goes around the 22 spot.
Terrible.
It was kind of cute.
It was okay.
Anyway, that pretty much wraps it up for us this week. I stumbled through that one.
Well, that's cool because we'll do it again in a second. We do want to mention the store that opened this week. I don't want to give too much of a shameless plug, but seems like you guys really like the stuff that we're putting out. And what we're going to try and do is, with the help of My McLife, who is a fantastic designer, done
amazing
a great job.
Graphic designer.
Oh, God. So we're going to try and release a couple new designs every month. Something creative that you haven't seen before from other shops, something that you're not going to get at the Shark Store. A little bit of inside joke throw in there every once in a while, kind of like hamburgers. I mean,
right. Hamburgers was a good one.
Maybe a little bit of copyright infringement in there somewhere. We'll try and dance around that a little. But yeah, so look out for that going forward. And thank you guys so much for the support. The other thing we want to mention, Fear the Fin Night.
Yes, a great time, an amazing experience for everyone, except for the game, obviously. That was a huge disappointment. We are going to be announcing the amount that we raised for the Sharks Foundation. We've kind of held off on announcing it because our checks hadn't been processed yet by the foundation. But they did get processed this week. So we will be announcing that in a post on Saturday.
Yep.
But just want to thank everyone who came out and everyone who was thinking about coming out. But, you know, it didn't work. Yeah, the logistics didn't work. The timing and everything. For, you know, thank you for the support. And the Sharks Foundation thanks you as well. And, you know, people in need throughout the San Jose area definitely appreciate it. Also, just on a completely side note, unrelated to hockey, hopefully everything in Egypt, all the turmoil that's going on there, gets resolved as peacefully as possible. I know Matt and I have both been following it today. And, you know, just it's very important that, you know, that every side of the story gets heard and everything goes that way. Anything else to add about our first podcast?
I thought it was fun. Yes, it was informative. It was. And for me, I learned a little bit about myself. But yeah, thank you so much, everybody. We do this. We work so hard at this because you guys are great. We love the banter. We love communicating with you guys on a daily basis. And it's really great, and we're proud of the readership that we built, because it's a reflection on how great you guys are. So thank you.
Well, that wraps us up for this week. Thanks again for listening. Make sure to check out fearthefin.com for all your Sharks needs throughout the week. We'll be, you know, continuing to do what we do. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at fearthefin, and Matt over here is at FTSPCY. And we'll see you next week for our second edition of the Fear the Fin podcast. Have a good night, folks. We'll